everyone. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and welcome to my show. You know, I hope you've had a really great day and you're working the profession of your dreams. Can anybody even say that anymore? I don't even know. You know, I see everyone struggling with finances and coming home to a family and not sure if the job will even be there tomorrow. People are working at things, you know, that they really, really hate. So we're going to have a great show this evening, and my guest is the expert in all this. You know, as consumers, we say it's okay, you know, when we go and we purchase something and maybe we don't get the best product or we don't get the best customer service. But, you know, that really reflects back to the company. So really whoever owns the whole shebang, you know, as I would say. But, you know, I really thought about that one day and I said, you know what, there's something up with this because I would call, like, Verizon, and one person would give me one story, and another person would give me another story. And then I'd call back again, and they'd say, well, those two people were wrong. I've got it right. And I would always have the comment that you're only as good as your front desk. You know, same thing with the doctors. You go in, and the doctor will say, why don't you call me back? And you could say, I gave the message to the nurse. I gave it to the receptionist, you know. I told them, I left them messages, I sent you emails. And they're like, well, I never got it. Oh, well, whatever. Again, you're only as good as your front office. And who's your front office but people who are working? So, you know, if a product from an idea like to a CEO should be driven by passion, you know, it's a real need to help others. But our economy, you know, I think is tanking so bad, people are starting to not care and they're showing up as what I call bodies for pay. You know, are you really one of those? I will honestly say, at one time, well, you know, if we're really being honest, I can honestly tell you it was twice. I had really, really bad burnout. You know, I really needed something of meaning for me in my life. You know, today we're going to offer suggestions. My guest is the expert on this, about starting a new business. And do you think you really want to get into that? You know, well, we all hear about Obamacare, and we all hear about what's going to happen next year and how people aren't going to have jobs or this, that, or the other. Maybe if we came out of all that and just said, okay, I got all that. But, you know, I think you really need to hear all the good, bad, and ugly, which is what we'll talk about today. Because then you can make an informed decision. So my guest today is Gary Branca. He is an author of the business and marketing book, Bringing a Product to Market from Your Home. And he is also the founder and CEO of ClipEase Worldwide Incorporated. It markets and sells his invention, the ClipEase badge holder pins. And he's also a frequent speaker at business events and on the radio. Gary's been on the show one time before, and we had a great response. People wanted to know so much more information from Gary, and you'll be able to have the link at the end of the show, and you could also contact him directly if you have some questions. But he'll be talking to us about really what is it about starting a business. It's not like you just sit down to the computer and you say, I'm going to go order some things on Alibaba, and I'm going to resell them. It's not a small business. And all of the other glitches that go along with that. So I'd like to welcome Gary to the show. Gary?
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. You know, as I said in the beginning, you know, we really have lost what a business is anymore. And this, you're such an expert on this. You've made your own mistakes, but now you could share with us about those, you know, how not we don't have to repeat them, in other words.
Like you said, I authored a book, Bringing a Product to Market from Your Home, and it truly is a book I would have liked to had when I was starting. I did a lot of things right, and I did a lot of things wrong, and I think you learn a little bit more about the things you did wrong. But starting a business is a very serious decision. There's a lot of, like we'll cover tonight, good, bad, and ugly about being in business. But it can be very rewarding, and we'll get into that here in a little bit.
Well, you know, we always say about the good, and I think the good and the great is if you have an idea, but you have to have long-standing passion. Don't you think this whole conversation is totally void if you don't have a long-standing passion? Like, you can't get up one day or one week and say, oh, this is great, and then the first thing that hits you in the face, like roadkill, you're out the door. Don't you think a long-standing need to have?
Oh, absolutely. Persistence, that passion, is something that really can't be taught. You have to have. When I first started out, I made the commitment that business would not fail from lack of effort. Other things can cause a business to fail, health reasons, all kinds of things that can sneak up on you. But the overwhelming majority of businesses fail because of lack of effort. I kept my day job. I worked my business and my day job for about 2.5 years together. And there were times when I came home from my day job and I would have a small order, sometimes only $20, and somebody would call and they'd say, I have to have it tomorrow. I have to have it overnight. And I was supposed to get the gift for the party, and I just didn't get it. I've got to have it. Well, the last thing for $20 I wanted to do was the carrier had already picked up for the night. I had to go 20, 25 miles down the road as fast as I could to catch the last drop off. But I did it. And that person remembered, and that when it came time for their Christmas gifts or a gift for everybody in their company, they remembered that I bailed them out. But it takes some drive. I would have liked to just said, nah, it's only $20, can't do it. But you got to have that commitment.
And that's something, like you said, you cannot teach that. That is something that has to be really inside. Like I said about, you know, you go to the work and you just feel like you're a body for pay. I'm sure you've had that experience. How many times do you go somewhere that you feel like that? You're a body for pay in some business. You ask them where something is. Can you tell me how to use this? Can you tell me, you know, what to do with this? Or it's a product you're selling, and they can't even speak on it. I was in Michael's the other day at the craft store, and they have a big, huge sign in the front that says, download our app for today's circulars. So we downloaded the app. We went to the desk, and I said, you know what, it's not working for some reason. She says, I don't even know how to use that, so I can't help you. And it was really?
Yeah. it's everywhere. However, big companies go out of business. Big companies have stock that collapses. Big companies, just because they're large, when that kind of that reflects on the supervisors, and that reflects on their supervisors, and most of the time that reflects on their CEO. If large companies will spend a fortune to get you to send an email and then never return your email, or
right.
If you try to call them, I think that probably the ultimate of everybody can relate to is calling a service for your computer or software. If you
right.
have to call technical support, it's a nightmare. And
yeah.
those companies eventually do go out of business. And then they wonder why.
Right, and that's true. And like I said in the beginning, you're only as good as your front desk. If the people downstream are not representing you as the owner or you as the product, there really is nowhere else to go.
Yeah, you know, I talked to a CEO of a major corporation one time, and as a result of our conversation, he started doing it. He emailed me one time, and it was a fabulous email. But what he did was he actually called his tech support, or he called and placed an order on their 800 number. He personally, on his cell phone, would every month or so would go through the calls just to see how he was treated as a customer. And it was amazing what he found.
Right. So I think that's a lot of times when people say, you know what, I'm overdone with this. I can do this better, you know, when they start a new business, or I want to serve people better than I'm being treated. So do you think that maybe that's how small businesses are getting started, and what would be the first step?
Well, actually, small businesses do. Entrepreneurs fill a void, and this type of behavior and this type of lack of behavior is an opportunity. Every time a company just doesn't serve its customer properly, there's an opportunity for somebody that will. And most of the time, it's because of a problem that a person finds an opportunity, or they have a product that fills a need because their product is better than what's currently on the market. If you're having trouble, so are thousands of others. And that's something
right.
to keep in mind.
So what would they do first? What is the first step you would suggest I'm thinking about a business. What do I do today?
Well, the first thing you do is you research what is available out there. You've seen some of it, obviously, and that's why you came up with the idea of the service or the product. And so you have to check out the competition to see what's there. If it's a new product, you certainly have to go to the U.S. Patent Office to make sure somebody doesn't already have a patent on your idea. And even if they do that, it doesn't mean the end of the road. Sometimes you can enter into a percentage agreement or buy it outright for sometimes very little because the person just doesn't want to market it. Then you, after you research it and you find it's free and clear, if it's a product, you do a prototype. If it's a service, you go out and you talk to relatives and friends to see if anybody would actually pay for that service. And then, of course, you go to the licensing and your local, your city or your county, and talk to them, and they'll tell you what you need. And then there's some hoops to jump through, and the name of your business and websites and that type of thing. But you can do them pretty reasonable now. Almost there are other entrepreneurs that have started businesses that you can start websites with formats. You know, you can just change colors and change shapes and do it very cheaply. It's not as expensive to go into business as people might think. Some people go out and borrow and then they have to make. But what I did and what I suggest is start small. Do it as a sideline. Matter of fact, I believe everybody should have a business on the side. It doesn't matter what you do for a living, you're not safe. In this economy, you never know when they're going to cut back, and you should have something that you can fall back on. It may be a product that you invented to go along with a hobby, or it may be a sport that you came up with a little invention that helps you participate in your sport. But everybody should have a mindset to look for opportunities.
Well, you know, also, too, I think when people say, I have an idea, and, oh, darn it, I found something that's already out there, what am I going to do about it? But I still think mine's a little bit better. You know, I have heard of people who have actually contacted that other company and entered into an agreement to, in other words, support their or share their idea, and then they can just walk away and take the royalties.
Yeah, it is done. A lot of times you can patent an idea based on another product, but change it a little bit or significantly, or modernize it, maybe make it lighter or something like that. The other company already benefits from having a customer list, a list and a manner of sale. So it certainly doesn't hurt to talk. You try everything. You get some, you don't get some, and you try everything, though. You try every idea you try every avenue to sell your product.
You know, we always talk about the government red tape. What have your experiences been with the government red tape?
Well, I guess this comes under the category of the bad.
The bad. We're in the bad.
Discussion tonight. There is an extraordinary amount of red tape, and it's built up over a period of years. A lot of it is just plain and simple fundraising, a way to get money to build a bureaucratic association and give you very little in return. Everything from collecting sales tax to tax on your inventory, tax on your payroll, tax on your income for state, federal. A business owner spends a significant amount of time figuring out tax forms. I don't do my own payroll anymore. I use a payroll service, but I figured I needed to learn how in the beginning. And at that time, I had six employees, or I quickly got six employees as I grew. They would almost monthly send me a letter saying I was incorrect and I owed this and I owed that. And I would copy the forms that I had sent in. And then a week later, they would send me back saying, thank you, it was correct. And then 3 weeks later, another, same thing would happen over again. So there's a lot of of red tape out there and starting a business. I talked to a business owner not too long ago that opened up a restaurant. And before he opened up, he went to get his final permit. And they said, you need a fire inspection. And he said, I already had a fire inspection. And they said, well, you're in the county, you need a city and a county, so you need one more fire inspection. So he said, okay, and he got the phone number, and he called him up, and he set up an appointment. Of course, it's another fee, so he pays the other fee. Lo and behold, a guy knocks on the door, and it's the same guy with a different clipboard. He has a contract to do both. So the guy went through and inspected the same stuff he looked at about a week or 10 days before, and the guy, of course, paid his fee, and then they opened it up. Now, I mean, that shows you how where we've come. In our as far as fees and regulation, it's just incredible. Another individual I know, he builds convenience stores. There's 78 agencies that he has to deal with and buy permits and have inspections from before he builds the building. 78 agencies.
And, wow.
So I mean, it's a danger to our capitalist system. It really is. When and there's not everything is not, you know, the answer of less. But when a government is in charge of inspection or is in charge of keeping people safe, most of the time they don't do the job anyway. It's just a revenue collecting. The other end. The other end is just as dangerous. You know, I mean, the other end is big businesses keep little businesses small.
Right.
So one extreme to the other, it's in the middle is where we just don't get enough representation.
Well, how do you feel that they keep them small? Like, what are your thoughts?
Well, large corporations are the ones that lobby the most, that have the funds to lobby members of Congress and lawmakers, and they will put stipulations that you can't start a brokerage firm or a it doesn't matter what it is, a garage door opener, a pest control, until you've had X amount of experience of years, X amount of worked under another guy for X amount of years, to make it difficult to so they don't have as much competition.
So it's controlling the marketplace.
Right. So they try to stifle their competition so people don't compete with their dollar, their sales dollar. So you get it from above and you get it below. And I'm not saying that there isn't challenges, but in the business, it can be well worth it. It is a very satisfying you can secure your finances. You can help any causes, charitable organizations. You can see the difference in people that you hire, people that send their children to school because they work for you. And to get an idea, especially in my case with an idea, to write a idea on a piece of paper and then, you know, actually create wealth from just an idea is a very fulfilling feeling. And it is well worth all the bad, but there is bad. I mean, you do it is very difficult. It's a difficult business environment in the U.S. right now. People are very busy. They can't return your calls. Buyers for catalogs and whatnot are just completely cut. Instead of 10 buyers, they're down to 3. And large businesses and small are holding their capital because they're not sure what's coming. You mentioned Obamacare. People aren't sure how that's going to affect us. So they're not going to run out and spend their money. They're going to hold their money in case they need it.
And then we wonder about, you know, am I going to keep my business under 5 employees? Am I going to turn around and make sure that I just have an internet business? And all of those stipulations, those are bazillion other ways to open a small business. And, you know, your business, you've gone through all of the good and the bad. So you really know, is this good for me or is it not? So can you share with us maybe some thoughts on what an internet business, or what do you do? you know, if you've got an idea, do you really want to buy your product from Alibaba and just be a wholesaler or a reseller? You know, what type business?
There's pros and cons to all businesses. A service business, you don't have near the overhead. However, you're tied to your time. A physician, for example, even if they line up patients like they do in each room, it doesn't matter if he works from morning until night and he quickly moves from one patient to another, he can only see so many in one day. So his income is limited. That's why physicians will buy real estate and different things to try to increase their wealth. Having inventory is expensive because you have money is sitting there until it's sold. In my case, I prefer that because the retailer has the long hours and the different they go through the tedious operation of reselling a product. And through the different time zones and even throughout the world, when I wake up in the morning and check my orders, there's orders there that might have been sold in Norway or in Spain. And I didn't do anything. I slept. So everything has its pros and cons, and you have to weigh one against the other. But most people work real hard in their day job anyway, and you might as well work for yourself if you're going to work that hard. Is the way I look at it.
Well, let's talk about patents and ideas. You know, the bad and the ugly of these.
Okay, now you will, one of the things that will happen to you if you have a successful business, a successful product particularly, is you will get copied. The best patent in the world will still not keep, you probably read in the news here where iPhone, iPad, Apple, and Samsung, two giants, they have all the money in the world to patent items, and they're fighting in court, costing millions. The best protection an individual can have is sell the most of his or her product the fastest and gain market share. Once your name becomes synonymous with a product, then you've accomplished that goal. People still say, pass the Scotch tape or pass the, or let me make a Xerox of this. They don't say, let me make a Sharp or let me make a Minolta of this or something like that. They still have the copy machine is still a Xerox and tape is still Scotch. They may go buy something else, but you're still going to be recognizable. You're still going to have the market share. Some products don't even need to be patented because a lot of times a person improves the product and basically render their own product obsolete, their own patent obsolete. And also, if we don't have enough to worry about, and sometime in March they're talking about changing some patent laws, and it's not for certain yet, and they're going to give it a trial period, but we seem to be moving towards a European type of thought in a lot of ways, whether you know are politically inclined to go that way. Obviously, I'm a little right, being an entrepreneur and businessman, but the patent is another example. They're trying to, now in Washington, they've passed some of it, but they're trying to turn the system more like a European patent laws, which is first to file, not first to invent. And it doesn't sound like much of a difference, but it is. What happens is, now you can do a provisional patent, gives yourself a year. The provisional just states when you came up with the idea. You got a whole year to file a patent. You can test your product. And then when you go to file it, you have proof that you thought of the idea first. The European, or the way that this country seems to be moving now, is that you have to immediately patent your product before you can even show it to anybody, with the risk of somebody else patenting it for running to the patent office first. That puts a very large burden on the inventor, and I'm hoping that they'll see the error in their ways and not go through with it. It would be very, it makes things such more difficult. I know that the people that supported that bill said that this would enable patent holders to achieve their patent much, much quicker, and that's what they thought was good, but they really didn't discuss the other steps that were involved in that bill. Getting your patent really, really quickly means that it also expires much quicker, and then your giant box stores can cash in on the individual's idea. So they're looking for the good of the whole society, not the mind of the inventor. And I think that that's very dangerous, because we want to reward creativity, not take away from creativity.
So I'll be the devil's advocate here. So if I am someone who has a product, and I think it's great, and I put it out there, blah, blah, and I get my, I sign up or whatever for a patent, and let's say maybe someone else has a patent or a product that I may have missed in my exploration process, and, you know, their product is doing fabulous and mine isn't. You know, what do you do then? Because... you know, yeah, that's
the problem. Are you saying that you came up with a patent or an idea that was already out there? Is that what?
Well, let's say if I have an idea. Let's say I'll just say a clip for my hair, and I think it's great, and I checked everything, and I looked on the internet, and I checked all the patents and everything, and for some reason, I was just not a good enough person that checked everything. In other words, I applied for the patent, it didn't fully come through yet, patent pending.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm patent pending and something else is out there, but you're still marketing, you know.
Yeah, you would have to.
That's wicked.
They would send you a cease, and you would have to stop producing. What happens is you do your own patent search.
Right.
Excuse me. And you're required to put down the closest, what they call prior art, the closest products to yours when you're doing your search. But
right.
If you don't find it, the patent examiner does a more thorough, and chances
right.
are he will. But if they don't, and even years later it comes up, it's who got their patent first, who was
mm-hmm.
the first one that came up with the idea. And that does happen, and of course they make the other person stop. And once in a while they just go ahead and, hey, it's good for both of us, we'll give you a royalty. And I'd say almost 9 times out of 10, the one that owns the patent will just take a royalty, maybe a percentage of what they sold in the past, or maybe a percentage of what they sell in the future. But a lot of times you can improve it. So, but yes, if you do have somebody's, that's why you have to be real careful in the beginning and do the best you can, because there's many wonderful inventions out there that have never been marketed. And it's also very possible that two people can come up with the same ideas at pretty close to the same time. Because of the way society is, the way we do our daily chores and different reasons like that,
mm-hmm.
two people can come up with the same idea.
Well, how about the idea, too, that let's say, okay, I want to do a small business. It doesn't always have to be an invention. You could say, I want to do a small business, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to make wreaths and I'm going to sell them online, or I'm going to buy all the stuff at the craft store and I'm just going to make it and sell it online, or I'm going to sell it out at fairs and things like that. And then I'm going to have other people do that too. So with those types, those are still considered small business. You know, and
sure.
What type of ventures do they need? Because, you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, an invention and a product coming to market. Let's talk about the other side of it. I'm not that smart. I don't have a product like that. You know, I just have what I can think in my head simply, or do with my hands simply, or maybe resell.
I was going to say, there's people that resell items. There's people, all these craft fairs, and some do
mm-hmm.
very well. There's some that do. I talked to a lady just the other day that had a wonderful food product that she cans, and she's starting to be successful. People just love how it tastes. And so there's many, many avenues that an entrepreneur can go down, and certainly making something out of ingredients, something that's out there but you can do better, is a great way. You can join organizations, you can volunteer your time, you can get your chamber, do all that to be known, and your little product. There's many people that I know that do that. They sell, they make wreaths, or they make products, and they get involved in the community through charities. Maybe they hook into a charity, and they give so much to the charity for every sale. And then, that, of course, that charity would help endorse them. So anybody that is involved with that charity would like to do business with each other to help the charity. So there's a lot of ways people start nonprofits that way. There's associations that are online. There's several people that do that with Make-A-Wish Foundation or the Breast Cancer Association. There's many of them that will furnish an item to an association's website and share in the proceeds. There's many ways to be successful doing exactly what you just said.
You know, well, your book, too, you know, definitely you have talked about, you know, your invention and getting it to market, but I'm sure there's a lot of processes in that book that is common to any business. You know, anyone saying, I'm going to be me, this is my LLC, you know, that I can do online for just a nominal fee, and I'm going to be a business. So don't you think everybody could still benefit with the book?
Oh, certainly. Bringing a product to market from your home with $500 and an idea, you can make millions, is the title of my book. But I have talked with and learned from all different types of businesses. And a lot of times a spin on an idea can make the difference between success and failure. I talked to a gentleman that had read my book that laid tile, of all things. And he said, well, how can that help me? I talked about a product. I said, well, my first writing was a booklet. I said, have you ever thought about writing about all the disadvantage of carpet and the pictures of what carpet looks like when it's pulled up and how unhealthy it is for you and how much of an advantage it is for tile, and then instructions for laying tile. Now he sells several booklets on Amazon and different places online, and it has his contact information in there naturally. So when people decide that they don't want to put the tile in themselves, they call him. But it also, for 99 cents or $1.99, he sells dozens and dozens of those e-booklets.
You know, I think almost anyone could.
Sometimes you can have a service and have a product.
Right. I think anybody could do something, take a spin on what you're doing. I remember when my kids were growing up, my father was a truck driver, and he would see hubcaps. This was in the 60s, in the 70s. And he would see hubcaps, if you remember, you know, they would just pop off all the time. Well, he started collecting them in the tractor trailer all the time. You know, he was out every day on the road. He may as well. So he started grabbing them. And then when my kids were 10 and 12, they got an old school bus, and my father bought it for them, and they wrote down how much it cost so they would pay him back, and he started putting all the hubcaps in there. Well, when it finally got full, they decided to sell them on the side of the road. You know, like everybody did in the 70s.
Yeah.
I'm sure you passed all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
But then I can remember, you know, they would be doing it every day, and they'd have it written down, you know, what they bought, where they got it, and everything in their little notebook. Well, one day, talk about a business, somebody from the city came by and said, how much are you paying in sales tax? And they were like, what? You know, what are you talking about? We're only here one day a week for 4 hours. That's it. And what do you mean sales tax? Well, then they started to pay sales tax. And then they started having to rent part of the lot in which they were at. So the kids learned very young how to run a business, you know, at 10 and 12. And then eventually they got some stock, and then when they got older, then they just quit that, and it was perfect. So, you know, people can really do almost anything because now my sons could almost talk to anybody about hubcaps, you know. Maybe they should write a little e-book on hubcaps, you know.
Yeah,
the
and also sales. I mean,
yes.
You sell yourself. I mean, they learned a great lesson about selling.
Right, and to even think about...
You know, yeah. And those are the things that are valuable later in other businesses.
Well, sure, because, you know, they came home and then they'd have to add up all their money as soon as they walked in the door. They'd have to take it out of how much tax they had. They'd
write
it down
accounting.
On a sheet of paper, and they'd go do it. Yeah, and they'd have to go pay the tax bill.
Right. So that's accounting. They learn business accounting. It is. And that's one of what you do as a business person. You learn as you go. No one, you know, there is very few people that have all the answers. If you're a corporate America and you're an Ivy League school graduate and you work on Wall Street and you decide to take your customer list and start your own company, you know, I probably don't have much to teach you. As a matter of fact, you probably can teach me. But for a person that has a job that wants to start a business and wants to start on a shoestring, that's what we're all about here, and it can be done. You solve one problem at a time, and believe me, you'll run into problems that you never in a million years. Usually when somebody calls you and says you can't do that, what they mean is there's a fee.
Right, and
you can do it, but it's going to cost you. And
But I will always say to that, if somebody calls you and they're like calling you on something, you know, saying you didn't do this the first time, play stupid. Dude, I didn't need it, not even have a clue that there was supposed to be that. How many people actually know, like you said, do I know all of the 100,000 rules? I don't, and believe me, they don't either. So call them on it and say, I didn't know that. Can you explain to me how my process fits into your rule? Because I have seen, like you said, with the inspections, I've seen a lot of people get stuff done anyway just because they didn't want to confront the person, or they didn't want to ask, or they just wanted to succumb to it, saying, well, they must know what they're talking about because they're smarter than me. You know what? And what I say to that is baloney, because that really is not true. You know, they're just pencil pushers too. You know, you got
to
call them on it.
You
have to.
You need to stop any process until you fully understand it. When you're a business owner, and that goes with all the products that you make, catalogs, pamphlets, booklets, postcards, printers, it doesn't matter. You need to stop and say, explain this to me. And unfortunately or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, you're going to have to become an expert on an awful lot of things. I always thought in the beginning that somebody doing a printing job for you or doing another service would do the best job they could, like I did with my clippies.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that wasn't the case. What they would do is the least amount of work that you would accept. So you have to give yourself an education to make sure that you're getting what you're paid for. And after a while, you're going to know a lot about a lot of things. And you just have to stop that person and have them explain, and you verify and you check, and you do. Now that we have everything in the imaginable on the internet, every government agency has all their regulations there, and most of them are required by law to help you, including the patent office. They got an examiner. If he wrote something on your patent, call him and ask him, and they have to explain it. And
you know,
it doesn't matter who they are.
But I think a lot of people get confused with, well, I don't really know the definition of those words. I know this because I've had it happen to me. I had to learn, really, how to do websites and blogs and even this radio show. I learned how to do every single bit of this by myself. No one helped me. No one told me anything. I didn't do any video tutorials or anything. I kind of just walked through, and if I hit the same button 10 times and the 11th time I got the result, okay, that was a good thing, you know? But you really have to learn. And I had one woman, she was starting to help me, and she said, well, you do this, 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 and this, and this, and then you drag that to that. And I said, you know what? Finally, after about a few hours of talking to her, I said, you know what, I really understand. I know you know your business. And I know you're telling me about looking at the tutorials and stuff on the internet and all, but if I knew the definition of the words that they were using, I probably won't need your help. But right now, I don't understand what the words in the sentence means, and then I can understand
but you'll
the sentence.
And what you're saying, and you certainly found out, every industry in every section of a business has its own language.
Absolutely.
And everything has its own words that mean, there might be an English word that really has nothing to do with it, but in that industry it means something significant. So you have to, and you get most of that by reading. You need by reading everything you can get your hands on in that subject. Every publication, every trade publication. I remember when ROI, return on investment, I think it was. I must have read 50 articles, and they always used the initials. They never said what it was.
Right.
And I thought that's what it was, but I wasn't sure. Finally, somebody in some article wrote it out. So something small, like you're saying, can be just a roadblock. But the more you read, if you're in a particular industry, you need to either subscribe or go to the library and get and read everything in that industry that you can get your hands on. And also a professor a long time ago in college taught me a great thing, and that was how to give yourself a class yourself. And he taught us to get opposing points of views from experts in the industry and read and study those, and eventually you form your own opinion, and usually it's in between the two is the answers. And it has served me well. I've given myself many, many courses about a subject that I do absolutely nothing about. By the time I was finished, I knew quite a bit about it.
What I have also noticed, too, is that people can do when you're starting a business is if you find, let's say you want to make jewelry, you can type in making jewelry as a small business, making jewelry as a startup company, startup making jewelry. You know, take those words and put them a bazillion different ways. And then go to all of the first few pages websites and sign up for their newsletter.
Right,
sign up for everybody in the Blue Moon's newsletter. Because once you do that, then you learn the language and the lingo, and you say, wow, I just didn't know that one little thing, you know? And that just opens up my eyes, and it's like, whoa, you know, cool. Yeah. Somebody wrote a word on it.
Yeah, so you can imagine 18 years now from starting with $500 with an idea I drew on a piece of paper, and 3 million clippies later in 18 years, you can just imagine what you've learned, you know, what I've learned.
That's right.
It's just been incredible. Stuff I never dreamed that how it was really, you know. I mean, you have preconceived ideas of how things are, but you have no idea what it's like when all employees with a difficult decision, all those eyes turn to you for a decision. Or especially if you've never been in a business before and it's your first one. The decisions that you make, the effect, the first time you have to let somebody go, for example, even if they deserve it, which they did, it was still, you know, I mean, I didn't sleep all night, you know, I mean, those, you definitely lose some night sleep in business.
Well, you know, we have about 10 minutes or so left in the show, and, you know, I really think the good part about a small business is, these are my thoughts, and you can share with us yours, but the good part, I think, is you get to experience something different, to take your passion and maybe put yourself in the place of sharing with others instead of feeling like you might be mistreated in another business or you weren't being heard or whatever that lingo might be, and you can actually take control of your own life. And then
another way of saying it that I like to say is it gives you a platform. It gives you a platform to speak as a business owner. You're part of the community, and your thoughts, you can change how your community operates by just giving your opinions. It enables you to be heard. It enables you to touch lives. It's quite a feeling. It's you touch lives in ways that you never even knew existed.
I mean, sometimes good ideas are usually give backs. You know, people want to be giving back to somebody else or something else too.
Yeah, and the more you give, the more comes back to you. It's incredible. There are people that will say, I can't afford to donate to this charity. Well, what I tell them, you can't afford not to. Now, it doesn't. If you don't have the money, that doesn't mean you can't give them your product at wholesale. I give clippies to a lot of fundraisers, and whatever they don't sell, they send back to me. I give my time a lot of times. I volunteer. You can't afford not to give. It all comes back. It's amazing. I remember after our worst tragedy, the 9/11, they were given blood and things like that. One of my employees came into my office and said, we got a bunch of American flags, which were selling like crazy, American flag clippings, but mm-hmm. we have a lot of them, and I think it would be a good idea to give one to everybody that gave blood. They're looking for little gifts to show their appreciation. I said, great, mm-hmm. you know, give them. So we gave them. And then they would go back to their office, see the flag, call up and buy them. We tried to give them away. We ended up selling more than we gave away because people would take them as free, take them back to their office. People would like them, say, where'd you get it? And then they'd buy one for everybody in their company. And so, you know, it was all in the spirit of giving, but we ended up, you know, selling thousands. It's amazing. That's how it works. That's how businesses help each other and help their communities.
You know, and then we talk about the bad and the ugly, and I think that's more about if you are able to do something. Granted, you know, you say about China's taking jobs away from the U.S. Well, if China can make, you know, a pair of earrings for 15, 20 cents, and you can make that same pair of earrings for 15 and 20 cents, you know, in the U.S., you don't need to sell them for $15, you know, because China's selling them to the wholesalers for $2. So,
right.
You know, you really need to look at what is your upscale, you know, what is your upsell on things, and are you really maybe sometimes pricing yourself out?
Right. And also, you know, people don't realize that a lot of times the actual manufacturer of an item is the least expense. You know, if they're a couple
right.
of dollars or 20 cents sometimes from China, you're going to spend so many dollars more to ship them to the stores, so many more dollars to hire people to type in the orders, and so many more dollars to the taxes and the different things that you spend in this country. It is a worldwide economy, whether we like it or not, and
right.
a lot of times the manufacturer is the least of a company's expense. It's all the other things that are spent here. So it isn't always a negative, you know. I mean, yeah, I'd love
Correct.
To see more here, but it's a world economy.
But you definitely need to have your eyes wide open when you're doing business with anyone else to be able to represent your product, too.
Right.
I mean, like you
yes,
said before, you want to know what you're getting is your product.
Yes, and you run into challenges. I used to call them the 800-pound gorilla. All of a sudden, I'd be in my office, everything is quiet, and I'd hear this in my mind. I would hear this gigantic gorilla running down the hall, and then we'd wrestle, and then I'd finally win, and that would take care of that problem, you know. And then a week
yeah.
or two later, there'd be another 800-pound gorilla come down, and I'd start looking down the hall, make sure that another 800-pound gorilla wasn't coming at me. But it's a very interesting and very fulfilling when you do solve those problems. And the challenges are many, but the rewards are just out of this world.
So I guess if people are really thinking about after the first of the year, what might something be to do to supplement their income, and maybe they could eventually, quote, quit their day job, you know, I think probably it would be a good time of year to maybe sit down and say, what am I really interested in and what am I really willing to commit to this because it is,
right.
like you said,
it
don't
is.
Quit your
and
day
also,
job.
Also, there's a chapter in my book and others as well about thinking like an entrepreneur. How do people recognize these opportunities and other ones never see it? I think we mentioned on your last show the individual that went snowboarding and when he got to the slopes in Colorado, his backpack was just drenched. A can of Red Bull had spilled all over his refreshments that he had stuck in his backpack. A lot of people, you know, they throw it away and clean it and get other stuff. Somebody else might eat a little of it and throw it away and clean it. This guy, the Red Bull had spilled on his beef jerky, and he ate it, and it tasted great, and it gave him a little lift. He started a product called Perky Jerky, and he makes $1.5 million a year.
See?
You know, so what makes those people recognize these opportunities? Another friend of mine, his wife bought a electric guitar for Christmas, and it was last year's Christmas, I believe. And she said, if you scratch that thing, I'll kill you. It was a very expensive, be real careful. So he's worried, and she went to the kitchen and got a dishcloth and laid it over the guitar so he wouldn't scratch it. Well, the next day, guess what? She sewed a thing that fit over his electric guitar. Now he sells it all over the world. These musicians got these big belt buckles, and they scratch the back of their electric guitars, and they always needed to be protected, but nobody had thought of a good way to do it. So, I mean, these things happen to all of us, but what makes some of us recognize these opportunities and some of us never take notice? And that's interesting. I cover a lot of that in my book.
I think the idea of don't ever say, well, I can't do that, or somebody else already did that. And the answer would be is take a leap. So could you give us all the information about your website and how to purchase your book and what they could find on the website and how to get some help from you? That would be great.
Okay. My website for my book is www.garybronga.com. That's GaryBronga.com. And I have a place to sign up, and I give away the free booklet, 48 Great Tips for Bringing a Product to Market from Your Home. It's an e-booklet that you can, once you sign up, it's emailed to you. The Clippies website is www.clippeze.com. And anybody that wears an ID badge, I think you'll find that very interesting. It's a great way to wear your ID badge. The book is sold on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and all your bookstores can get it. If you don't see it, ask for it. They can get it.
Well, that is really great. And I think you have a ton of tips, too. Your website is definitely someplace to learn how to talk the lingua, too, you know, learn the language.
Right, right. Entrepreneurs have a language of their own, and small businesses do as well, and you do have to learn that language. And it is a good place to start. There's several other references that I share, both in my book and in my booklet. The reference material I used along the way, people that are now personal friends.
You know, what I do know with your book, and I have read it, is that it's very, very clear and concise. You know, sometimes you'll read a book and it'll be a whole chapter about the word patent, and it'll just go on paragraph after paragraph after paragraph, and you're like, wait a minute, I need my marker because I don't even remember what the first page said. You know, yours is here. This
is it. I tried to make it conversational, and I tried
right.
to make it information that you just didn't get. You can get, you know, the facts about, you know, sole proprietor, corporation, C corp. You can get those in any textbook you pick up. But what I tried to pass on to the reader is what it's really like to start a business, what it's like to start one with $500 and a computer, and what you have to do, the pressures that you come under, the surprises that you get to help prepare what you'll see down the road. I tried to talk about those items, things that you don't see in every textbook.
You know, because it's just it's just a lot easier to just flip through something and say, there's the page, there's the item, instead of having to read a whole chapter again.
Right. And I found myself, when I read millions of books, and I found, you know, well, not millions, but hundreds and hundreds of books, and I always found myself reading the chapters that applied to me right now and then going back later. And I tried to make the table of contents that way, so somebody that needed that information right now, today, could get it. And then when they get to the next stage, they could come back and get that.
Well, you know, it was an absolute pleasure having you on, Gary, because so many people have questions and not too many people have quite frank discussions, I think, like we do. A lot of people are, do this, do that, and this is the way I said you have to do it, you know. And it's not all about commanding. It's about saying, you know, like we said today, the good, bad, and the ugly of what you should need to know.
Well, I enjoyed it. I always enjoy talking with you.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us, and you will be back on in January, correct?
Yes, I will.
Great. And then we'll be talking about then. Okay, so now it's January. What are you going to do? So then it's going to be A, B, C, D.
That's it. All right. Great. Well, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. If anybody would like more information about Gary and his websites, and you may have missed it, you didn't have a pen, it is included on the description of this show page. And if you'd like more information about myself and to connect with Gary or anything else, please give me an email at outoftheboxhealthcare.com. And until tomorrow, thank you for joining my show, and it was a pleasure being with you.